Welcome, welcome. It is a live streaming edition of Raised by Wolves here at 1500 ESPN. And we are streaming live on Facebook, I think YouTube, Periscope, just about anywhere that you can find a live stream. Yeah, Twitter, everything. And Manny Hill, Dane Moore, Danny Cunningham, we're all here relaxing on some comfortable couches. And we're going to talk some Wolves basketball as we do every edition of this podcast. And Portland loss, I look back at that and I just kind of feel like, and Danny, you and I, we talked about it over the weekend. Mm-hmm. You just have that feeling like if Robert Covington was in that game, the Wolves would have found a way to win that game.
Yeah, and that game felt the entire time like they had no business being in it, but there they were, and they took a lead in the fourth quarter, and it just felt like you knew Damian Lillard was going to do something at the end, which he obviously did for Portland. That's why they won the game.
He always does.
It felt like the Wolves just didn't have enough, no matter how close they were or if they were winning even at the end. It just felt like they were going to find a way to not win that game, and Portland found a way to win it. But to your point, if Covington plays there, that's a game they probably win. So that loss definitely stings more for the franchise than last night's to Golden State did.
Well, they messed up the defensive coverage at the end of the game against Damian Lillard. Mm-hmm. And Carl
and the
Towns
other one
didn't
was a
raise
good
up.
Shot. And the other one's just a tough shot that he
I mean, both of them. I mean, Cat needs to be – they're playing up on those. They've been playing them the whole time. Nurkic kind of sprinted into the screen, and it allowed more space for Lillard to be open to make those shots. And what we haven't seen much of with Robert Covington in the game is defensive breakdowns. Even – it's weird. There's just kind of been a – I don't know what even the word is, just an aura effect where everyone else seems to just do their job better. Like, it doesn't even make sense, but it's weird to think that even if Covington was in the game in that play off the ball, that the play would have been different. Maybe he would have like been in Cat's ear a little bit more to get up there, but it's just the defense was so different, particularly against the pick and roll with Covington out versus when he has been in.
How much of it is him having an effect that way or him being able to erase mistakes?
I think both. I mean, that one maybe more specifically. Like, okay, so if he was in the game there and he's at the point of attack guarding Dame, maybe he's able to get up over the screen a little bit better than, I don't, was it Teague?
I believe so.
Oh, it was Jeff, yeah.
Yeah, on Lillard there. So, yeah, there's some of that, but I do think it's both. Probably just, you know, I think we talked about this last week. It's the KG effect of like, okay, things are kind of spiraling out of control, and he's there to just stop it and kind of allow the team to recalibrate. So yeah, I mean, that's what we've seen out of Covington all year. Then that obviously was just not really there against Portland, and I don't think it was there in Golden State or against Golden State last night either. That game to me looked a lot like the previous time they played Golden State earlier, and I don't know if that means Covington isn't totally healthy, Golden State's awesome, or what exactly it is, but it wasn't that kind of Covington-led Wolves team that we've seen for kind of the first 11 games, I think it was, that he played. So, yeah.
Is he a legit defensive player of the year candidate? The way this defense has transformed overall since he got here?
I mean, it is only December 11th, so I think that we have to temper this kind of talk for all awards, whether it's Derrick Rose with the Sixth Man of the Year award or whomever you want to name as your MVP leader right now. I think we have to pump the brakes a little bit for every award, but yeah. I mean, he's transformed this team. He's a guy that has a reputation, which for this award you absolutely need. For Sixth Man of the Year, you don't necessarily need it, and for MVP, you don't necessarily need it. But Defensive Player of the Year, so much of it is based on reputation because we don't necessarily have a great metric to tell you how good someone is as a defender.
You can't just look at, he led the league in block shots. So
or
he
plus
has to be
minus.
Defensive player of the, yeah.
You have to dig deeper to be able to judge who's really a great defender because we don't have a true metric to just be like, this guy is the best. There's not one of those for defensive statistics right now. But I think that you have to – he is one of the best defenders in the league, and he's absolutely changed the way the Wolves have been able to play defense.
I think probably if you're trying to look for a number or like a way to, you know, cut out some players not to be eligible for it, it would be guys on not top 10 defenses. I think you at least need to be a top 10 team defense.
Sure.
Probably top 5. For me, my assumption is the Wolves – even though they have been that since the trade, I'm not banking on a top five level. Probably, I wouldn't say they'll finish top 10 level either for the rest of the way. So that might preclude him, but he's definitely, I think, will be in the conversation, maybe sure. A finalist, the top five or whatever.
I've been incredibly impressed with him.
Totally.
Since he was acquired, I have been blown away with how well he's played on that end of the floor. And he makes highlight plays defensively. It's not just he locks down a guy and he gets isolated or whatever and you don't hear from him. He's made some incredible plays.
It just, I've said this numerous times and written it. It's I felt pretty familiar with Robert Covington coming into the trade. And I wasn't. It's once you're watching him every single night, and you're seeing those highlight plays, but maybe even more so the stop the bleeding type things.
Yeah,
it's the consistency of that steeping in that defensive excellence really has made him stick out in a way to me that I wasn't expecting when the trade happened.
And I think he's helped in the locker room too a lot more than
huge.
A lot more than the public or just the regular fan realizes. I think that he's been a big boost inside of that room.
It would be, we see the little post-locker room.
Because we're there every night where the listener to this or someone watching the game on Fox Sports North, they don't have that same access. So they don't necessarily realize, one, how much that matters, because I think it matters in basketball more than any other sport.
Mm-hmm.
In baseball, you've got a 25-man clubhouse, and it's a really individualized sport. In football, if you play defense and you hate someone on offense, it doesn't matter at the end of the day.
I'm skeptical a little bit of it. I think there's an act element to it. I'm not saying that Cat and Covington aren't cool and boys to some degree, but there's a bit of an act to the I'm gonna come and interview you while you're in the media scrum, when you know there's cameras there, when you know the media.
I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about them making dinner plans after games and always being the last two guys in the locker room. I'm not talking about after shoot around when they ask each other media questions. That's all good and fun, but I get that could be an act. But I'm talking them making plans to hang out and doing those types of things that I don't know that necessarily existed prior to this.
And I also think, too, it'll be interesting to see, especially now that they're on this West Coast road trip and they've lost two in a row now. So if the losses start to pile up, you start to wonder, okay, is this great chemistry that we've been seeing the first few weeks since the trade, what's going to happen? What's going to happen when they face some sort of extended adversity? Is that chemistry still going to be,
present? I would have to think if someone on this roster knows how to handle losing, it's Robert Covington. I mean, the guy was part of a team that went 10-72. If someone knows how to deal with losses, it has to be him, right?
Yeah, no, yeah. I think so. I think any team faces that question. Even, even teams who have had good runs in the past and they've been friendly together, they've been a strong group, losing can just have a really adverse effect on those personalities.
And every team goes through it.
Look at Golden State with the whole Draymond and KD thing. Yeah.
No team goes through perfect things. Even look at Golden State, the adversity they went through the year they won 73 games. The playoffs were just full of adverse situations for them. The regular season went incredibly smooth, but once they got to May and June, it was nothing but
Steph
adversity.
Steph got hurt, right? Was that
Steph hurt his knee a little bit. Draymond got suspended. And Draymond racked up flagrant foul after flagrant foul. They were down 3-1 to OKC. They went through a ton of adverse situations, and they were allegedly the greatest team to ever play in the regular season.
It's just it's part of the game, and it'll be – I think that the goal is to not have the extended losing streaks, to not to not let that stuff –
You can't let it pile up.
Right, and because that's what happened on that last West Coast road trip. They lost all five, and stuff piled up to a level where something had to change.
And truthfully, that might have been the best thing that could have happened to the team in hindsight. Losing those five games, and now especially because they've essentially dug themselves out of that hole, losing those five games and getting everything restructured probably helped them in the long run.
Definitely, I would agree.
So, Dane, let's get to your piece that you write every Monday. You write a piece for us every Monday at 1500 ESPN, and you touched on some Tyus Jones things in the piece you wrote yesterday, and it was pretty interesting because you got into some numbers with how he performs with other starters on the floor, and just sort of elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, well, my biggest takeaway was just kind of going through. We don't have a huge sample of the new guys here data yet, but now I think it's been 14 post Jimmy Butler games. So I started going through, you know, some of the lineups, and the best lineup now this season in terms of net rating is Tyus Jones is in that group, and it's the bench plus Robert Covington. And it's an interesting juxtaposition on last season's best lineup, when it was Tyus Jones plus the starters.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying it's all Tyus Jones that is the reason, but
it sounds like it.
But I think when you tally up that in back-to-back seasons, it shows you, you know, it shows you some, it's at least interesting, mm-hmm. and points to the notion of the value of a lower usage point guard who kind of embodies the type of style you want to play. And that group, particularly this season's group, is playing at a slower pace. They're defending at a really high level, and they have a really high assist to turnover ratio. Those are quintessential Tyus Jones traits. And I don't know. I'm just impressed by that again. Cause last season I was pretty skeptical of that. Everyone kind of latched on to those numbers of, okay, like the plus 24.3 with Tyus Jones in with the starters. Like he should be starting over Jeff Teague.
It felt like he was an analytical darling.
It was. It did feel like it. And I was skeptical of that because if you kind of looked at the 11 games he started for Jeff Teague, the Wolves were like hot at that point, like mm-hmm. entering that time. They played a bunch of teams. Like if you go through game by game, it's like they played the Pacers who didn't have Victor Oladipo. They played the Suns who didn't have Devin Booker. It was just like, I kind of assumed it was a statistical anomaly.
There you go.
And I think, you know, this is starting to suggest something else, that he's just a really solid analytical darling.
Yeah, and that's okay. I mean, right. he's never going to be much more than what he is right now, I don't think. I don't think he's going to develop into someone that you can be a legitimate contender and have him as your starting point guard. But he's a great guy to have come off the bench.
Maybe it can be... Because I'm pretty much with you there, but maybe it can be even more impactful if the minutes are bigger, if that lineup...
If he's playing more than 13 minutes a night.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And I mean, I don't know. Right now, you probably don't have a path to that. I mean, I know you could say maybe you want more Tyus over Teague. I would get that. But having Rose in there, and I believe you need to use Rose at the point guard a little bit, that isn't there. But when we start talking about a year, two, 3 years down the road, if Tyus Jones is going to be, you know, part of this team... Maybe this starts to suggest that you don't necessarily invest a ton of future resources in the point guard position and lean a little heavier onto Tyus.
Well, I mean, he's not the only question mark they have at that spot for in the future, because Jeff Teague has the $19 million player option this summer. Which...
Well, what do you think the odds of him? I don't know if you were there at dinner when we were talking about that, but like some people are like, oh, he might not opt into that because it's like, where's his team going to be?
He's not going to get that kind of money anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, that's my opinion, too. I think...
The only thing I could see, the only reason I could see him opting out of that is if he feels like he could get more, like, long-term security. Like, if he feels like somebody's going to give him, like, a three-year contract.
Like, 3 years, 36?
Yeah.
Type deal? I could see that, but...
I think more, like, traditionally what we see happening, and Thaddeus Young, actually, a former Wolf, kind of had the same thing this year with the Pacers. And there was kind of some questioning of like, oh, he might opt out. I think he had like $13 million, and like maybe he'll opt out to take like a 3 or 30 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we see is guys usually just grab that highest dollar value amount, particularly at like Thad Young, once you're like up in 30, up like Teague is.
Yeah.
I guess that's just to say my assumption is he does, you know, opt into that. And that's kind of a crucial pivot point when we talk about the future building blocks of, you know, of this team going forward.
Yeah, the only guy I could think of that might have been like the exception was, remember when AK-47 was here?
Yeah.
And Khan, I think, gave him 2 and 20. Mm-hmm. And the second year, I think, was a player option, and he opted out of the $10 million or whatever for the second year.
That's a good one. Yeah, I didn't.
For whatever reason. And I never.
Maybe that because he didn't believe in the team. I mean, there.
Yeah,
they were,
that's the only
probably
thing,
worse,
reason I could think of.
Worse than this group. Well, but then he signed with Brooklyn.
Yeah, for like $2 million, I think.
Yeah, but they had the Russian owner.
That's true.
Who there Mikhail was a Prokhorov. Whole bunch of like speculation of like, well, might be getting that $8 million back like somewhere else on the side. But yeah, no, I don't know.
It is worth noting with T, he's 30. Like, this could be his last chance to kind of cash in and sign a longer term deal, because once you get above that age, and if he does opt in, that means he won't be playing under a new contract until he's 32. So you have to wonder what he'll be able to get after an age 31 year season.
Right. And I think also that he's kind of a frustrating player.
Oh, incredibly. How about the one possession, I want to say was in the third quarter last night. He dribbled the ball for 23 seconds, passed it to Andrew Wiggins for a contested three. Yeah. I have never seen such a grenade in my entire basketball watching life.
Yeah, that was... Yeah, I mean, so...
Have you seen a worse one?
No. That was bad, and it happens too often. I wrote about that, the call too, is the amount of late shot clock field goal attempts Andrew Wiggins is having largely because of Teague, you know, in that sort of way. And at least entering last night's game, his effective field goal percentage with under 4 seconds on the shot clock was 26%.
Not great.
Oof. Not great. And that we've talked about this before too, where Karl Anthony Towns last year led the league in effective field goal percentage late in the shot clock at 61%. So you want to get cat the ball in those situations, math would suggest. But what I will say to Teague's credit is, and if we're pointing to lineup data as any sort of, you know, reason or rationale, is that the Wolves starters also had a very good net rating last season, and mm-hmm. Jeff Teague was a part of that.
Yeah.
And same thing with this season. It's not their best lineup, but their second, and like I think it's their fourth best lineup also includes Jeff Teague. So he's not necessarily this anvil. He's just frustrating and he's imperfect. He's
Kirk Cousins. That's what seriously, that's kind of what it is, right?
They got about the same salary, right? Well, Kirk was 484.
Kirk at 3-84.
3-84.
About 28 a year.
Woo, okay,
and
never mind.
Jeff is getting 19.
My NFL salary knowledge is not
your
not
excuse
on point.
For that. That's okay.
But it is kind of the same thing where Jeff Teague will it's just like Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins will make some really good throws and you're like, "Man, that was incredible." But then like on the next possession, he'll do something that's like, "Oh my god, what is he doing?" And it's kind of the same thing with Jeff Teague. Jeff Teague will play really well, but with him it's more like games as opposed to like moments. He'll have games where you're like, "Man, Jeff Teague was really really good tonight." And then the next game you're just like, "Oh my god, he was awful."
Like Jeff Teague had that 18 assist night.
3 points.
He had 3 points, 18 assists, and I didn't think he played well. Like he had a career high in assists, and I'm just like, "Jeff Teague wasn't that good tonight." It just wasn't. I think, and part of the reason I feel that way is so many of those possessions where he just drains the clock and then throws a grenade to somebody, and mm-hmm. sometimes
and
it turns
shot.
Into an assist. I'm like, see, that's a wasted possession. If they don't score, it's an incredibly wasted possession. One, you got out of rhythm. You didn't get a good shot.
That's Jeff the Rajon Rondo effect.
Yeah, it's that's when I feel there are too many of those, no matter what his plus minus says, no matter how many assists he has, no matter how few turnovers he has, that's when I feel like he didn't play well at all.
And so I don't know if this is a Kirk Cousins thing or not, but if the Vikings are to make the playoffs, I don't know if you can expect more out of Kirk Cousins than you've got or not. Like if he's a player that does raise up to another level. Mm-hmm. But Jeff Teague has shown he is that type of player where he tries harder in some games. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think that's outlandish to suggest at all. Like, you tick Jeff Teague off in the middle of a game, even a regular season game, you're going to get a good quarter out of him.
Yeah.
And in the playoffs, I thought he was – I think he sprained his finger or something too. But he was – I mean, he was a good player for the Wolves mm-hmm. in that playoff series last year because he brought another level to the game. So there is a higher plane when it comes to Jeff Teague compared – to Tyus Jones. Is it more consistent? No, it's volatile. There's grenades along
sure.
the way.
Oh, tons of explosions.
But he's still the best point guard that this team has. And mm-hmm. I mean, Derrick Rose has been good too. And a couple of games when he started at point guard, he's been good. But I still think you do need a lot out of Jeff Teague on this team, just as it's constructed, even if he's not worth, you know, $19 million this
year.
Well,
he's certainly not worth it.
Right.
I mean, I don't think that is not up for debate, in my opinion. I don't believe he's worth $19 million for a season.
But if you're suggesting that he's, you know, that he's worth, you know, a 336 next year, like 12, like...
I wouldn't pay him that. but some team might. I'm not suggesting he's worth that. It's not to me. Like, right. If I were running a team, Jeff Teague would not be on my free agent big board, but someone might give him that money.
Phoenix.
So what would, I mean, okay, but there's a price you would pay him if you are, you know, Phoenix or a team who had a general need for a point guard. I mean, how much would you pay Jeff Teague?
I don't think I'd go over 8 or 9.
Okay, so I'd probably say it's a little higher than that, but still, like, that does show that they're, like, we get this way with contracts sometimes. Mm-hmm. Kirk Cousins or whoever. Yeah. More so in the NBA where we go,
thank you, you're for overpaid. Listening to the Purple Podcast. Yeah.
You're overpaid, but that doesn't mean you're useless. You still have a utility. And I know that's not what you're suggesting, but, like, I know Gorgui Dieng, that's something, like, people tend to talk about. Or a lot of those guys who signed big deals in the mm-hmm. summer of 2016. There's
the exception of Kevin Durant, that entire summer.
They're all comparatively overpaid. That doesn't mean they're, you know, nothing. And I still think we're parsing through that.
Except for Timofey Mozgov.
Timofey Mozgov, Jan Mahinmi, maybe. I don't know. There's a few of them.
Well, the other part of this, too, is, and we're totally speculating, but you sort of...
That's why we're here, Manny. Recklessly speculate.
Reckless speculation,
away,
yes. But, you know, you look at the off season, the coming off season, and obviously we're still very early into this season, but the market, the free agent market for point guards, is it going to be strong? Yeah. I don't, you know, I mean, that's
there's
a question.
The
draft, is this this upcoming draft, is this a strong draft for point guards? I'm not sure that it is. It's
strong
not, there's not a lot
Zion.
Of, there's not a there, lot
well,
of depth.
The league
at that
is,
position.
This is the most point guards, you know, we've ever had in the league,
right.
And it's only becoming increasingly the volume of point guards who come out of draft or lead ball handlers, even if it's not a point guard, a guy you're going to run your offense through. There's more and more of those every year, and it is decreasing the market value of comparatively of the point guard position, you know, at large. I think there's a strong argument to be made that isn't a position you need to invest in, like John Wall style or, you know, something
right.
like that. Like, that can be a position where you can get a median level player and give yourself a financial benefit due to it's supply and demand, right? Like, there's mm-hmm. just so many point guards now these days.
And
yeah.
I do think something is to be said that this is probably the most that the game's ever been perimeter oriented to, mm-hmm. especially with how much the 3-point shot matters and just everything is guards matter more now, I think, than they ever have in the NBA. And that's not to say they haven't been vitally important at other times, because they have, but it's just played so much more on the outside now.
I definitely agree. And the point guards, you know,
a big part of that.
Yeah. And needs to learn how to adapt and you'll play a little bit differently now than maybe in 2009. And I think if we're looking for fair criticisms on Jeff Teague, it's a lack of evolution in his game.
I would agree.
From how he came in. I mean, even the eye test kind of gives you that. But if you look at him statistically, it's very much the same player. We haven't seen an increased volume in 3-point shooting. We haven't seen him, you know, playing at a faster pace. Kind mm-hmm. of these key tenets of change in the NBA. Jeff Teague has not embraced.
Jeff Teague would be a perfect fit on a team in like 2007.
Yeah.
He would be a great 2007
point guard. He was an all-star. What year was that with the Hawks?
2014-15 when they won 60 games.
Not that long ago.
They got swept in the conference finals that year.
Yeah. I mean, but, yeah, I don't know. I guess it's just, you go through Twitter on these games and you start seeing stuff and, you know, you see a
but I also understand frustrations when things like that happen.
Totally.
If you're a fan, you're going to be frustrated. I mean, that it happens, and not just when it happens once, but it's repeated.
I just always suggest that when you know someone's going to be around for a long time, and again, if we're assuming he's opting in, it's, you know, it makes it more fun to embrace the things, or at least be fair and acknowledging mm-hmm. the
How can
things
you embrace
he does
those
do well.
Grenades.
The things he does do well. I mean, and there are things, of course, like it's to hold him accountable for. But it seems like with Jeff Teague, we're just so eager to say, these are the, you know, and I wrote them. I'm doing it too, but I guess I'm just pushing back on the narrative that, like, all the minutes should be going to Tyus Jones and Derrick Rose or something
right.
like that. It shouldn't. It he's still solid.
And the other part of it too is there was, with this fan base, there was such this deep rooted love and connection with Ricky Rubio, and Ricky leaves, and Jeff Teague is basically labeled immediately right away. He's labeled as the guy who replaced Ricky Rubio. And we love Ricky, and you know, how can Tibbs trade Ricky away, even though we know now that Ricky kind of was the one who asked out and everything. So, I mean, Jeff Teague, ever since he got here, he's sort of
started
had that over
on
his head.
Foot. Yeah. I remember at his media day, it was his first, you know, exposure to Minnesota last season. Somebody brought that up and was like, you know, Ricky's kind of been someone the Minnesota fan base is, you know, latched on to and as the point guard and like, you know, whatever, what are your thoughts about that? And he goes, I hear about that. I hear about that every day. Yeah. I'm not kidding you. Every day somebody says something to me about Ricky Rubio. Yeah. And I was like,
last year,
from the beginning.
Last year, every time Ricky had a good game for the Jazz and every time Jeff Teague had a bad game for the Wolves, it blew up on Twitter.
Right.
Ricky had a good game the other night.
And again, kind of understandably so, too, because again, the contract that paid him $5 million more a year and an extra year than Rubio.
And the fact that Jeff's older, too.
And yeah, so there are fair criticisms of the player. And there's fair criticisms of the contract and to question, you know, the whole process of it. But again, he is the point guard on this team. He should be the starting point guard on this team. Could it be flexed a little bit more to... You know, like last night against the Warriors, Derrick Rose, in my opinion, should have never been playing the two when you're facing Klay Thompson
who is
out there.
6'7", 6'8", and Derrick Rose is an undersized two as is. That's a really difficult matchup for him.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Well, and that leads me to my next question. Josh Okogie.
We got 3 minutes last night.
Well, we've been talking about we've been talking about this ad nauseum for weeks now, though. That I mean, look, we know in the grand scheme right now it's difficult to just sort of fit him into the rotation. And Tibbs has his 9-man rotation and he's set on that, and that's what it is. But I have, for the last few weeks, long felt like situationally against certain teams and certain matchups, Tibbs has got to find a way to get Josh into the game just because of what he does defensively with the length. And, I mean, he plays hard and everything. So it's just how – and this might just
this
might
just
be
– yeah, last night was one of those games.
That's what I'm saying.
And I like what you're saying is it's a situational subbing.
Yeah.
Again, looking at the numbers of the success that bench unit has had, it's silly to say this should have been done differently, like on an every night basis. I mean, that is very much working. It's very much working. The thing is there are times and places, Golden State last night, when you have massive wings in Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, even Sean Livingston off the bench. They didn't have Iguodala last night, but they run big on the wing. You can't go with a 6-1 guy, and that's something that Tibbs has been doing. He had Derrick Rose guard LeBron when the Lakers. There are situations. Stick with the 9-man. Stick with the way things are going the majority of the time. But when something is off and you have a different situation, you need to adjust to it.
Somebody gets into foul trouble.
Robert Covington didn't play against Portland. That's an opportunity where you need to. You need to be more malleable and adjust that in a different way. Yes, Okogie played, but I think Okogie could have started that game.
Yes,
and then you leave Rose off the bench.
I was really disappointed that Tibbs didn't make the decision to start Okogie, because I think moving Rose into the starting lineup, it not only is, yes, it led to 37 minutes from Derrick Rose, which is far too high in a non-overtime game in 2018.
Wait, which game? This was
Portland. He played 37 minutes, took 25 shots. Those are numbers that are too high for Derrick Rose in 2018.
He also played 18 straight first half minutes.
He does that all the time.
No, that's
Tibbs does that with him all the time. Like, that's not new. They're in when they were in Cleveland, when Andrew Wiggins did not close out the game, he played 17 straight minutes in the second half. Like, that is frustrating, but it's not a new thing. Like, Tibbs does that with Derrick Rose all the time.
And even injury aside, like, which is a huge thing with Derrick Rose, it's just Rose plays so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's that redlining. Like, you hit that point where you're like, okay,
where you have the turbo, where you're playing 2K and you have the turbo button on for too long.
The Gatorade cup's next to him. Yeah, like, for 5 minutes, he's got the Gatorade cup. He's begging to be subbed out.
And you know what? But he, I mean, and what we've asked him about, he isn't. Like, he said, what Rose has said is that's it's cool. Like, he,
I mean,
that's fine.
He has been nothing but the consummate professional. Yeah. He's been, I think he's been great for this team. He's been great in that locker room. I think Derrick Rose has been awesome for the Wolves this year. But playing him 18 minutes at a time is something you cannot do.
Right. And sorry, I cut off your point a little bit with Portland.
No,
I wish that stuck out to me. I'm like, all right, Rose, you're spot on because
that was something I was going to bring up. I wish they would have started Josh Okogie and just plugged him into Robert Covington's spot in the rotation and played him every single one of Covington's 30 minutes and just keep Derrick Rose as is, because
that's a normal thing to do. Like, yes. For a lot of teams when they have, like, even – I don't know why this one always sticks out to me. Like, when Denver was really good and that one season and Melo got hurt for a while they took Julius Hodge, who was completely out of their rotation, and just plugged him into the starting lineup, and it just didn't shift anything in the way that everyone else played. Like, obviously it's not Melo out there, but the team didn't lose a beat because it was still so much of the
same. Want the ripple effect to be minimal.
Yeah.
If someone's going to have to miss a game like Covington did the other night, and that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Covington's not going to be the last player on this roster to have to be inactive for a game. I promise you, someone is going to get hurt at some point this season, whether it's for one game or for 10. Right. Someone's going to miss time. It just happens.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to plug in Josh Okogie into his spot, give Okogie all of Covington's minutes, because that doesn't change anything else then. Your bench unit stays the same. You sub one player in for Covington, but the other four guys are the same.
Yep.
You don't change not only the starting lineup, but also the bench lineup. You don't overload Derrick Rose, who should not be playing 37 minutes at this age after everything his body's been through. He's just not that guy. Sure. And you can't play him 18 minutes straight either, like they do.
I would just like him to, you know, consider who's the opponent. What is the situation at large?
I don't think the opponent matters in playing him 18 minutes. I think that's a no-no if it's against me, you, Manny, Seth, and Jonathan.
I guess I'm saying in the context of the Portland game, like, it, you know, it was, and against the Warriors, against bigger wings. I guess I don't have problem with the rigidity of the rotation, because in ways, you know, it's working. But once something stops working and is a little bit off the tracks,
mm-hmm.
you need to adjust.
Yeah.
And say, all right, how do we optimize this on the fly? You can't, I mean, again, we've said this before, it isn't just a video game where you say, you play these 9 minutes followed by this person playing this 8 minutes and that. Yeah. Like,
it's not 2K.
You don't see that around the league.
You got to be flexible.
You see guys shuffling in and out of the lineup, like, maybe even 3 times in a quarter. Like, that happens around the league. Turn on another game and that happens. It doesn't happen in Minnesota, and so I don't know. I think it's something fair to hold Thibodeau accountable for, but also to recognize that, you know, in some ways we were wrong by saying, what the heck? Why is this only a 9-man rotation? You've totally taken Okogie out. Like, part of the reason this team has been good
post
Covington trade is because of the rotation in that way. But again, it's doing the situational subbing thing that Thibodeau said he was going to do and largely has not with Okogie or with Anthony Tolliver.
So last night I watched the Warriors broadcast, because I typically do watch the – when the Wolves are on the road and I'm not there, I typically get the home team feed.
Mm-hmm.
And they were stunned Anthony Tolliver didn't play. Stunned.
You know, I'm stunned that if you're broadcasting
you don't realize that he's not in the rotation.
Why do you not watch the team's last game? That's like my biggest pet peeve of, like, all right, your job here today is to do play-by-play or color commentary – of a game. You should know what the other team did, at least in their last game. Watch the last game they played. I heard that too, and I was just like,
or look at a box score from the last month.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm not saying they're wrong. Like, Anthony Tolliver.
Sure, but like they were stunned he did not get off the bench.
They probably want him on the Golden State Warriors.
He'd be pretty awesome
instead of like Jarebko. If they had Anthony Tolliver,
Jarebko's been good though too.
Yeah, that's true.
AT could help a lot of teams.
Yeah,
he could help a lot of teams.
I think he
will help somebody else.
Yeah. I just don't know if Thibodeau will pull the trigger for like a second round pick. I just don't know if he'll do that.
It depends what they get, but I mean, I think if there's a name that's going to get moved off this roster, it's him.
I think, like, not fan logic because that's like pejorative, but like normal logic, non-Thibodeau logic would suggest that. But I think Tibbs is like, what? Like, I'm not doing anything that could potentially subtract from the total sum of wins my team can get this season. And he, like you were just saying, knows there's going to be a point in time in the season where someone's going to miss 10 games.
Yeah.
And he wants to be able to plug Anthony Tolliver in, not a 2020 second round pick. You know, like I just think that's my guess would be that's what Thibodeau's mentality is. So I'm not really, I think maybe a trade makes sense, but I just
certainly
don't think it's going to happen.
Certainly think a trade makes sense.
Going back to Okogie very quickly, and I know we got to go here in a second, but can we get past, and I don't mean, when I say we, I don't mean the three of us, but I'm more so asking Tom Thibodeau this question. Can we get past the fact that Josh Okogie is a rookie? And just, well, he's got to earn his minutes, and
I love your Thibodeau voice.
He's got to play hard for 48 minutes. But, I mean, we have to get past the fact that he's a rookie, and he's got to earn his minutes and everything. When you put him on the floor, good things happen. More good things happen than bad things happen. So it's like, I wish that Tibbs was sort of get away from, and I understand, you know, he's a young player and you want to kind of keep him grounded and everything, but he does good things when he's on the floor.
Is maybe the spot to have him on the floor in that first quarter when Covington subs out instead of plugging in Derrick Rose and playing him 18 minutes straight? Is that maybe the spot to
and then maybe give put Okogie, Rose in with maybe, like two maybe minutes give, left in the first quarter?
Yeah, maybe give Okogie 4 minutes in the first quarter and the third quarter. I know it's not a ton, but if you're going to find time for him, I think that might be the spot.
So that expands it to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And even if that, what you were suggesting, 12, 15 minutes a game for him.
I don't even know if it's like 8 to 10 minutes a game.
Okay, well, pinning that because I think that's interesting too, is if even if it's 8 to 10, you end up subtracting that 8 to 10 from the other bench. I mean, it's coming out of
Derrick Rose.
Yeah, sure. And maybe mostly out of Derrick Rose. So, okay, I get that. That makes some sense to me. However, what if because he's a rookie, he wouldn't be as good in those four-minute stints? What we have seen him have success in, all the games you're talking about, and that he has looked to be largely productive every time, but the games he's played, he's had a huge role. He's been able, even the Portland game, he played 26 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, my fear with kind of just plugging Okogie into something like that is that four minutes here and there wouldn't give him enough time to like get his feet under him to kind of be that. Because I swear, and this is just like memory eye test, whatever. I swear every one of like Josh Okogie's like very first plays or like drives is like something crazy where it like barely catches the rim. And then he goes and makes up for it with like a defense play down on the other end. But like he does kind of take a little bit of time to get going, I think. At least
I think if you would put him out with that lineup, which could potentially be, it would be Cat, Šarić, Wiggins, Teague, and him. You don't need him to necessarily be that offensive threat. You need him to be someone that's going to bring energy and play good defense. And you can do that in 4 minutes. You don't need to get your feet wet into the game to do that. You can jump right in and do those things.
And you know what? Like, maybe we do see something like that.
I mean, we won't. We won't. We know we won't. I mean, it's gonna be a 9-man rotation. Tibbs isn't going to change. I'm just spitballing here. Something that's not going to happen.
And I wonder, too, on the Derrick Rose front, if long-term, speaking in terms of over the rest of the season, if giving him 3 or 4 fewer minutes a game is going to help him stay sort of healthy and fresh over the course. Because
it adds up.
Danny, sorry, I'm knocking your head or you're knocking your microphone there. But you talked about it earlier about, like, Derrick's body has been through a lot over the years.
Last night he played 34 minutes. If you get that down to 28 minutes, you feel a little bit better about it.
Yeah, and yes, I know you would agree with it. It's just easier said than done.
Oh, I know, sure. And yeah. I know when this isn't going to happen. Like, that's another thing. Tibbs is not going to adjust to do this. It's just not going to be the case.
But it's a thought and an idea, though, right? Like, it's just like, I wonder. I guess my question is, I wonder if Tibbs thinks about that.
I think he does. You know, I think Tibbs thinks about anything that can lead to more winning. And if we are right that this is something that can drive more winning, I do think Tibbs, I mean, he is closed-minded in a lot of ways, but if he does reach a point in time where it exceeds that threshold where he's like, yeah, I do think that Josh now has enough experience, time and practice, yada, 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 that we could see it. I mean, yes, more likely than not. It's like our Kevin Durant conversation last week. It's like,
he's not going to be on the Warriors next year.
I don't know. You know, and one thing I want to say, just because I know, like, whether it's, you know, text with friends or whoever, I'm talking to people around the Wolves, it's, you know, this is such a big conversation. I understand it's like a meaningful one, but one thing that I don't think we talk about enough, and we focus on these minutia type things, is Karl-Anthony Towns. It's just so much more important than anything else.
Yeah.
And he's playing so well.
He has since the trade, yeah.
It's just, and that's huge. Like, that is, you know, that is the team.
Yeah.
So, I said it all summer. Yeah.
I said it all summer that he was, when the rumblings of the Butler stuff, even before his trade request came out, I told the Phil and Judd on the air, I said, Karl-Anthony Towns is the most important piece for the future of this franchise.
And every
decision. You have to get him right more than anything else.
Yes. Every decision, whether it's in-game or long-term roster construction, the first, second, and third thing you need to consider is how does that affect Karl-Anthony Towns and how does it weaponize and maximize what it is you can get out of him. So, yeah, I mean, the bigger conversation, if we want to talk about any of the minutia things, whether it's Dario Saric, Josh Okogie, whatever, the question is, how does Josh Okogie impact Karl-Anthony Towns? How does Dario Saric versus Taj Gibson affect Karl-Anthony Towns? Those are the things you need to look at because he's all that matters. Team is like best case going to be a 7th or 8th seed in the league, which means they're probably going to go and they're going to play the, you know, they're going to play the Warriors in the playoffs, and it's going to be a similar sort of thing to last season. What is important is not that, or what's more important than that is what are they going to do in 2020, 2021 when Towns is 25 years old and is able to actually, the question becomes more realistic of how does a Karl-Anthony Towns-led team compete against the Warriors then, or the equivalent of the Warriors in 2021.
Who won't be the same when Kevin Durant's gone.
Yeah, exactly. Or just older. Or anyone on any of that, like, those teams are older. I mean, it's just about Cat, and, like, that's why I never am, like, too frustrated with any loss or really anything with this, because provided that Towns is still playing this way, which is good, that we're cool. Like, we're moving in the right direction because Towns is finally being embraced as the guy.
And the reality is when, you know, 3 years from now, when Karl-Anthony Towns is 25, 26 years old, this roster is going to look different. Yeah. I mean, there's going to be probably some significant differences to this roster as opposed to what it is right now. I mean, there's probably 5 or 6 guys that are on this roster right now that aren't going to be here 3 years from now.
Which makes the minutia along the way important.
Sure.
We do need to, like, not we, but, like, Thibodeau does need to parse through how important is Jeff Teague? How important is Tyus Jones? What ways can we use Josh Okogie?
Yeah.
Like, the minutia along the way is going to determine in how you work with Karl-Anthony Towns in 2021. So it's like short-term and it's long-term, but both of those need to be considered. And I just trying to shine some light on, like, we're in a pretty good spot with Cat right now.
Yeah, I agree. All right, I think that's going to be it for us. That was a lot of fun. Great talk. Follow Dane on Twitter at DaneMoreNBA. Follow Danny on Twitter at RealDCunningham. Follow me at MannyHill84, as you can probably see on your screen if you're watching the stream. You can download this podcast if you missed any portion of it. You can find it on 1500ESPN.com, on iTunes, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you find podcasts. For Dane, Danny, I'm Manny. Thanks for watching and listening. And we'll talk to you next time on Raised by Wolves.